The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You are in the... What is up with the microphone?
What was up with that?
What? Yeah, something's not right with my mic.
So stop messing with it.
No, you did something to
it. No, I didn't touch
it. Does it sound titty to you, Rich?
Not at all.
No. You sound just as loud and jovial as ever.
But you were off key with your ad today.
Because he did something to the microphone.
Not true either.
I feel tinty today. That's tinty. Why I was like that.
I feel tinty.
I do. I feel tinty. Now,
you're so tinty today.
You ruined the whole opening now, Brady.
Would you like a redo?
No. It's too late now. All right. How you doing, handsome? How you doing, big boy?
I see. We've lost him already. Well, it's the Brady and Rich
Have
show.
We broken your spirit?
No, but you know what? I know you did something wrong because I saw Rich's face because when the Sports Center update was over, it was really loud, was it not?
Yes, that was very loud at
the
very end.
I'm telling you, he did something to it. Now I'm getting...
What are you talking about?
Yeah, I think it's Brady's fault.
Yeah, totally Brady's fault. It's nothing by tint. I'm getting like tinty.
What exactly are you talking about?
I don't even know what tinty means.
It's like echoing in my ear.
Oh my gosh, there's two of you.
Yeah, well, not that bad. I mean, I'll live, but it just... It's not my usual jovial self. You know I don't like to be a 10 on the jovial meter. Too many people
complain
about
that. Yes, you're too jovial.
Yeah, you don't want to... anger people.
No, we don't. Hey, trivia awesome last night, huh? Yeah. Was that great or what?
Thank you. I did a good job?
No, I just, I'm assuming most of the people thought I was hosting. That's why we had so many people show up.
It was crazy in there last night.
Packed. Man. I loved it.
And how about you hooking on with a team full of all of our employees trying to win the prize?
Yeah.
What is up with that?
Well, it's because I knew all the answers.
You have access to the questions because...
No. Arnie's... I never saw the questions. In fact, your girlfriend and your wife were very impressed at my trivia prowess. I answered just about all of it.
Something
your
made
son.
It too easy.
Your son was pretty smart, too, for having you as a
for
dad.
For a 20-year-old,
I was impressed.
Yeah. Somehow Rich knew there were 88 keys on a baby grand piano.
Absolutely. I've known that. I didn't know. Baby grand threw me a little bit, but I know there's 88 keys on a keyboard, piano.
What was the answer? I didn't hear the one about if you're on a ship and you're going from the Pacific to the... What was that?
That was Northwest.
Northwest?
Yes.
You actually admitted that you felt a little guilty asking that question.
Yes, I did. The best question of the day was, what is the only professional sports city that has multiple professional sports teams where all the jerseys are the same colors?
That would have been easy, though.
But it was fun.
I got that in... less than a second.
But I didn't know that was the only professional sports city, though. Pittsburgh, by the way.
It's Pittsburgh. They're all black and gold. It's a little tricky because there are certain teams like Memphis and San Antonio and some of these towns that only have one team.
Las Vegas.
So Vegas for now.
Yeah. So that could have been the answer.
It's had multiple sports cities. Yeah.
Wow, look at that. No,
it was
but it,
fun.
It was fun. It was packed. It was people were waiting to get chairs. They were hanging out in the bar. One of the questions was, what's in a Roy Robb? And the bartender had no idea.
A Rob Roy.
A Rob Roy. What did I say? Roy Robb?
Yeah.
God.
That sounds the same
threw
me
off when you made me all tinty to begin with.
What is a Rob Roy other than a, isn't he a pitcher for Arizona?
That's Robbie Ray.
Ray. Right.
Close, though.
Yes. A Rob Roy is some kind of alcoholic drink with vermouth and scotch whiskey in addition to some kind of cherry garnish.
That doesn't even sound good.
Sounds like a trip to the hospital.
No wonder nobody's ordered it in like 50 years.
Yeah,
have a Rob Roy, please.
When you ask the bartender, he goes, I don't know.
I don't have a clue. He's like, he goes, nobody's ever ordered that. It's unbelievable. Though
it was fun.
They do order Cosmopolitan still, they say.
It was fun. I mean, it was great to come out victorious, even though nobody was allowed to know that. So
you did not win anything, though.
You didn't get any
of the prizes.
No, we won nothing.
So
it was very frustrating for me.
Well,
my
competitive juices were flowing.
You got a free burger on the boss.
That's true.
The boss bought you a free burger.
That was my prize.
Yeah.
And that was a prize.
You didn't get anything because you got there late.
Yeah, I did.
And did you enjoy the booing when you
walked
in?
Yeah, I liked that. I actually a little spattering of booze there. That was awesome.
Spattering of booze.
I liked that. That got me all pumped up. I was excited about it.
So instead of making you tinty, maybe we should boo you and that will rally you up for tomorrow's show.
Maybe.
How about every day now we just go, boo.
Yeah.
And then he just, ah!
If you don't screw up... the board there. I'm going to have a refresher course for you on the board. Obviously, you've done something wrong.
You don't even know anything about this board.
If I asked you what one button on this board does, could you answer that?
Yeah, it turns on something and turns it off. Yeah. What else would it do? What do you think? I'm a knucklehead? Tell everybody where we're going to be tomorrow. Big remote tomorrow.
Yeah, we're pumped. This is breaking news. It was actually took a lot of work to get this done by a lot of different people, so we appreciate it.
Not really. All I had to do is say yes.
Stop. Had to do nothing.
It wasn't that tough.
What happened was we had to talk him through Arnie.
Yeah, someone said, do you want to do that? I'm like, yeah, I'll do it.
So tomorrow we will be broadcasting live from Memorial Hall at SUNY Plattsburgh. We're getting ready for the Cardinals in the Division III NCAA men's basketball tournament. There's a game at 5:30 between Union College out of New York and a school out of New Jersey. 5:30, so then 7:30 is Nicholls College against Plattsburgh. So we know it's going to be packed for the Cardinals game. We know it's going to be packed for the first game with fans and people trying to get seats for the second game. So come on, hang out. We're trying to make this like a college game day type experience. So we'll see you tomorrow at Plattsburgh.
And bring me ravioli.
Right into the hall?
Yeah, just bring me a can of ravioli or something if I'm hungry.
Ravioli. But I'll tell you, be ready to watch that team if you haven't seen them yet. It is go, go, is go. They are 100 miles an hour game.
The Suniac Coach of the Year, the Suniac Player of the Year. He's going to be an All-American.
Did they get a good crowd? Though?
They're going to have it's going to be sold out tomorrow.
It was packed last Saturday. And they've done.
What's a sellout there? Like
1,000.
Okay, that's pretty cool.
I think it's more than that.
Is it a little more?
I would think it's more than that.
We got a lot of listeners. Gym. We get a lot of listeners on the other side of the lake.
And we expect to see them tomorrow since we're coming through a hurricane on the ferry. That should be fun.
Plattsburgh, it'll be great.
Plattsburgh loves me. Plattsburgh loves me.
When have you ever had evidence of that even once?
Well, we were there over the summer when you weren't here. They would all come over just to see me.
Is that true?
Embellished? We went to one place. Well, they call it the Wiggletown Walmart.
Yeah.
And they made ice cream back there, and Arnie's first thing to them was, hello, can I have some chocolate fudge ice cream?
Yes. They loved me. They loved – what was the winds tomorrow on the ferry you were saying?
Yeah, well,
like 30 miles an hour.
Imagine just 40. 40 mile an hour with high winds and heavy rain.
What's the safe part? Like, does the ferry ever close?
No.
Not the Grand Isle one. Nope.
So it could be like 150 mile an hour winds.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning and 40 below. Doesn't matter.
But even if you fall over, you could pretty much swim, can't you?
Well, then no.
Why
not? You should be frozen. There's still ice. They're still breaking through ice up there.
Yeah, but I'm a good swimmer. I'm like Jack Wayne.
You are not buoyant at all.
I'm a good swimmer.
Do you
when even, I was a kid, yeah, I was a really top swimmer.
And Route 15 doesn't have any potholes.
In my apartment complex.
But now you – do you float well, Arnie?
No, I swim. I swim. I. You know what? I will bet you I can beat you two guys in a swimming race.
All right.
Olympic-sized swimming pool, back and forth.
You can't even get the bathing suit on.
And if you're –
beat us in the race.
All right, let's test this.
And if you're drowning, I'm going to let you drown.
All right, right when we get halfway between Grand Isle and Cumberland Head, right at the highest level, right there.
Doesn't the edge have a pool?
You just jump off, and let's see how it works out.
Does the edge have a pool?
It does.
Right, yes. Let's have Facebook, and we'll have these swimming Olympics.
Gross.
What are you gross?
I don't want to see you.
I bet you a lot of people would want to see that.
You know what I picture, Arnie, when Arnie goes on family vacation and Arnie goes to the beach? I picture him wearing the white T-shirt with the powdered nose with the sunscreen all over his nose.
I wear the European bathing suit.
Just be glad you wear something.
And no shirt.
I picture you wearing the white shirt to get into the
pool. Can you swim?
Yes. Look, I got long arms.
I know that,
pull,
but I still
Arnie.
Think I could totally reach swimming.
We'll find out tomorrow. 40 mile an hour winds.
Okay, I'll
drop you right
it.
Off.
All right, Brady, we got a lot going on today. What's happening on the show today?
Big show. We'll have our 4-minute football fix in 10 minutes. We'll do big deal, little deal, no deal at 4:35. Rick Pigeon will stop by at 5 o'clock. Rick Pigeon, Fairfax, Vermont native, on the NASCAR crew for Kurt Busch. Last year won the Daytona 500. Daily spring training update at 5:20. Hanley Ramirez with some interesting things to say about Hanley Ramirez. But first, Patriots got some competition for their own free agents. I just saw horrible breaking news that Rex Burkhead's going to have a whole lot of suitors in the offseason, so that crushes me. But Danny Amendola getting a lot of interest on the free agent market. They're saying he could get a $3 to $5 million a year deal annually, so there's a lot of competition for the Pats. So my question to you is, I know what Arnie's going
to
say, so I'll direct it at you, Rich.
Is
Danny Amendola a must re-sign for the Pats?
It kills me to say this, but I don't think he is. How is Edelman? Isn't he 32?
Edelman.
He's taken a serious beating the last few years.
You're talking about Amendola?
No, I'm talking about Edelman.
Edelman is 32, going to be 33 during the season.
Coming off of a major injury. Oh, man. You can't have them both. Can you? I mean, my opinion is that you can't have both of those guys. It would crush me to see Amendola go. I was shocked when I heard he only had like 61, 62 catches last year. He had about half that in the playoffs. I mean, he was the offense at times in the playoffs. And I love the fact that the guy goes out there in the slot, takes his hits like Welker and Edelman before him. And I love the fact, more than anything else, he keeps taking pay cuts for the cause. I mean, how do you let that go?
I said this yesterday.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Well, look, I said if you're going to pay him $1.5 million, you know, that was a big reason why he was on the team. But if he was going to demand any more money, which is what he's going to demand now, but somebody's going to offer him, what, $3 to $4 or $5 million, don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. Yeah. You know, that's exactly what I was going to say, because I'm not paying you that type of money when you're giving me 60 receptions. I don't care if you're best friends with Brady or whatever it is. I don't give a damn. You were only on the team because, what was he getting, $1.2 million this year? Was that something like that?
Which is such a steal.
That's like $14 an hour in our terms. So, look, if you're going to demand more money, hey, best of luck to you, and send us a postcard where you end up.
I think he's looking at it right now and saying, wait a minute, I was probably the most productive receiver on this team last year, and it's time to, you know, I think the reality is kicked in. He can choose to just continue to take pay cuts and play for, quote, and I put big quotes around this, but nothing for the Patriots, or he can go somewhere else and get three times that amount.
I think it all depends on, I mean, he could just simply retire if he wanted to. He could. He's at that age and he's at that accomplishment level where he's won a couple of Super Bowls and been part of, I think, 3 Super Bowls with the Patriots, if I'm not mistaken. I think he wants to play with the Patriots or play nowhere. That's kind of the sense that I've gotten. He wants to play with the Pats. He wants to play with Brady. He's very, very defensive of the Patriot way. All these things that come out talking about tension, he's calling it BS. I think he is fully invested in the Patriots. He's best friends with Edelman. He's best friends with Brady. I think that matters. But if the money gets up to that 3, 4, 5 range, I don't think he's a must re-sign. I mean, 61 catches this year. His long was 27 yards. Yeah. He only had 2 touchdowns in the regular season. As good as he was in the playoffs, you said you can't have both Edelman and Amendola. The Patriots have tough decisions to make because you've got a 40-plus quarterback. You've got 2 low to mid-30s receivers in Edelman and Amendola. You've got McCourty and Chung, who are going to be 30 and 31 next season. You got Gronk, who's 29. If he's back, his body might as well be 39. Yep. There's a lot of aging players on this roster, and you can't keep the band together forever.
And the thing, too, the other thing about Amendola is there's a lot of other guys that are already under contract. I mean, how low can he go is really the only, I mean, and Edelman's under contract, but again, you have no idea what he's going to come back as. Chris Hogan is signed. Cooks.
Mitchell.
I mean, Malcolm Mitchell. Kenny Britt, even, believe it or not. I mean, I don't know what his value is going to be. Philip Dorsett.
They don't really need him. They don't need him.
I mean, I can't imagine that I'm saying they don't need Amendola after his performance in the playoffs. I mean, how many 3rd and 15s did he get open and get 16?
They're precluded. Right now, their wide receiver roster is so full that they're precluded from even drafting anybody, really, at this point. So,
they don't have to, though. They're more worried about the other running back.
Wide receiver is their position of least need. Yeah. I think we all came to that conclusion, that outside of Tom Brady, wide receiver is the position that they are most set at going into next season. I would like to have Amendola back, but if it gets to $5 million and I'm up against another team and up against, you know, potentially losing another free agent in order to retain him, then I would have to let him go, and it does pain me.
It also depends on how many years. Also, I mean, 1 year maybe you're like, okay, we'll give him 3, stop there, we'll go up another mil or a half a mil, and see if we can get away with it for 1 year. 2 years, and the next thing you know, maybe you get a signing bonus, or they kind of gets the cap the following year, and you've got to pay him out. I'm like, you know what? I don't need the headache. I don't care how good of friends you are with the rest of the guys. Sorry about that. As you said, Brady, you can't keep the band together forever.
I mean, he made $2 million in 2013, $3 million in 2014, and then $1.25 million, and he took reductions in signing bonus every year.
But if you're on a team like the Patriots where you win playoff games, go to the Super Bowl, win that, how much extra money is that compared to, I don't know, go to the Miami Dolphins and not doing squat? Yeah,
I think I wouldn't be surprised if Amendola, he's got such the man crush on Brady and on the Patriots and being a Patriot, and he's productive. at a very low cost. He wants to be there, and I think there's a price tag to put on a guy like that. I think he's going to look at his agent, talk to the Patriots, and say, you tell me how much you can pay me next year.
I think the big question is, I think we're missing the point here. If he doesn't come back, does that mean Belichick has power over Brady? Or if he comes back, is Brady saying, hey, that's my receiver. I don't give a damn what you want. You've underpaid him for 3 years now or whatever it was. Give him the 1 year $3 million or the 1 year $4 million. Or I don't even know if this to be true, but if I was Tom Brady, and I'm not kidding around, I'd tell him, and if you really wanted him back, say, you know what, sign the 1 year $2 million. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make up another $2 million that I'm going to give you out of my own pocket. Now, I know he doesn't have to do that, but I think Tom's got the money. And
yes.
Hey, the only reason I say I wouldn't put it past Tom Brady to do that is he's so damn competitive. And even himself, right? He's taking a big pay cut. What is he making, $15 million a year, some baloney like that? He could have easily held the Patriots to the fire over the last couple of years.
The Giselle factor.
That's the way he is. I could see him saying that, $2 million? You want a check or cash? I'll go up to my bedroom right now. Do you see that or no? Yeah,
the bedroom of one of his 15 estates.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're right. There's
exactly.
No, money doesn't mean anything.
How about if
Tom
I just
Brady?
Give you my villa in Italy right. or something?
No, absolutely. I mean, if I'm Tom Brady, who cares about money? He's got a moat around his castle in one of his houses.
I mean, Amendola, Edelman, they're both important because of the familiarity with the offense, the familiarity with McDaniels, the familiarity with Brady, the relationship with all of them. We've seen it in Tom versus Time. He said, why is it that I go to these guys in crunch time? Because they're such a trust factor.
Right, right.
And that matters. But as I said 5 minutes ago, you can't keep the band together forever, and there are tough decisions to make. The Patriots are trending towards being a very, very old team overall. Look at a number of their starters. A number of their starters are pushing 30-plus, and that is old in NFL years. Amendola's played for 9 seasons already. He hasn't been healthy for a lot of them.
Right. But he's productive and cheap. I mean, there's a what's the price tag
but
on
we're
that?
Talking
and
about,
Brady wants him back.
Yeah, but we're talking about what if he becomes not cheap anymore?
Well, that changes things. But he knows that.
Yes, he does.
So if he becomes – the whole question was, is he a must-re-sign – if they get into a bidding war of $3 to $4 to $5 million a year, if this becomes a 2-year, $10 million commitment, is that something that you say, okay, we need him back that badly? And that's where I say no.
Right.
If you're telling me, hey, Danny, 1 year for 1.75, sure, let's do it tomorrow or let's do it March 14th when it first opens up. But 2 years, 9.5, I'm really evaluating there.
I'm not kidding around. If I'm like, hey, I got 3 villas in France. Which one do you want? That's all. Take one.
I'll go back to Edelman. Edelman's health is a key in all of this. Amendola moving forward is very much predicated, I think, on Edelman. I mean, you don't really need them both.
By the way, I just made $20. Clayton Shelburne said, $20 says Arnie swims like a rock. You're down. You're down.
You do realize the water is still right at the freezing mark. That's why there's still ice out there.
I'm talking about in a nice, comfortable pool.
Oh,
yeah, like at the gym or something like that where it's like 68 degrees.
Right.
You know, something like that. And
I like to swim in like a bathtub.
Yeah,
I need cold water.
The hot tub over there is nice.
And somebody's holding a towel for me right when I get out so I don't get too cold or
chilly.
That's
just a little different than jumping off the ferry.
Well, same thing, Rich. Same thing. I still can swim for credit. Brady, what is coming up next segment?
The 4-minute football fix. Does Odell Beckham Jr. really want $20 million a year? Will Arnie tell him? Oh, don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Maybe. Coming up next, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
I miss football. You miss football. We all miss football. So let's talk some football. Training camp may be a ways away, but we'll help you through the wait. This is your 4-minute football fix on the Huddle 101.3 ESPN.
I don't miss it that much yet. I only miss football when baseball starts. That's when I start missing football.
No, I'm done with it for a little while. But isn't the combine this weekend?
Well, the combine is going on now.
Oh, is it? Okay. That's news to me. And the draft hype has started. What's that, 2 months?
How is that not news to you? Don't play dumb for the audience.
I don't know anything about who cares about the combine?
You
I
tweeted
pay no
today,
attention.
You tweeted today from our station account. Lots of combine talk coming. Here's Todd McShay on Golic and Wingo.
Oh, yeah, but only because it said it in front of me.
Oh, my goodness.
Who cares about the combine? Hey, that guy can
I mean,
jump
I knew
high.
It was on this, you know, now, but I I don't care about the combine either. I'm not big like
I don't care about the combine in terms of.
Oh, I know people that live and die off that combine. Watch it like all you know
parties.
I'm not going to watch it. Oh. I'm just going to hear about. I want to hear about the interviews. I want to hear about the feedback. And you know that just shows the arrogance of a Patriot fan. Oh, we don't care about draft picks, the potential draft picks, because we just win the Super Bowl anyways. Those of us who you should be all in on the combine because you're loser team picking the top 10.
When I heard that Baker Mayfield grew like 3/4 of an inch in like a month, how's that happening? I don't understand what the hell, and his like grip size, his hand size got smaller. So I don't know what the hell, everybody's lying about this stuff.
I heard the first half hour of the Dan Patrick Show today talking about hand sizes of quarterbacks.
Oh,
just like there's got to be something else on.
I don't care. And I know they say, look at the hand size, look at this, that, and the other. Oh, please, I mean,
is he any good?
Yeah, exactly. How about what he did in college? You want to talk about that? What did he do in 4 years at college? That's what I want to know. But let's get to the 4 minute football fix.
Oh,
nice. They got music.
Odell Beckham Jr. wants $20 million a year from the Giants or any of the other NFL teams that might want to sign him away from New York. Can you see any way that OBJ gets $20 million a year? We'll start with the Giants in particular.
How many years would that be for? I'm just.
My guess would be Antonio Brown got 4 for $68.
So let's say 5. Let's just throw that in there.
I think it's probably 4.
Yeah, but you know what? If we say 5, it's $100 million, right?
Okay.
$100 million plus you get a signing bonus, don't you? You got to get that too.
But is that $20 million all going to be guaranteed? You said he wants $20 million guaranteed a year.
Well, let me tell you something. You nutcase you, because that's what he is. He's a nutcase. I wish I was holding the negotiations for the Giants and he told me that. Yeah, I'm looking at about $20 million a year, 5 years, about $100 million. I said, oh, good, good. And when you get it, please send us a postcard where you end up because I'll give them a big kiss. I'll send them champagne. No way I'm giving this cancer that type of money. I don't need his attitude. And by the way, he's not that great. He's good. He's real good.
No, he's great.
He's pretty
spectacular. He's not that great. I'm not giving him that type of money, and I don't need his cancer attitude.
He makes a lot of high-profile catches.
I know Eli wants him.
Okay.
I don't need his cancer attitude.
Look, there's one thing if you think he's a bad guy in the locker room. It's another thing to say he's not great. He's great.
He's good. I said he's real good.
No, he is great. He topped 90 catches, 1,300 yards, and 10 touchdowns in each of his first three NFL seasons. Not only have zero other players in NFL history done that to start their career, he's already got the third most 90-13 10 seasons in the history of the NFL.
3 years ago, you said the same thing about Dez Bryant, probably, too. I heard about how great he's going to be, and that's why they gave him, number 88 or something like that, took it out of retirement. All right, you know what? If I'm wrong, so be it. But I'm still not going to go and give him that. And you know what? He's got to keep that up to be a Hall of Famer. No. It ain't happening with me on the watch.
All right, so is this $20 million against the cap hit for the Giants? I mean, does that count?
$20 million against the cap is different than his actual salary.
Okay, because I mean, a guy like Antonio Brown, who makes $17 million, the highest paid receiver. I mean, is that must be crushing the Steelers' cap.
Well, he just got it for this upcoming
dead
year.
Cap.
Starts, yeah.
I mean, if they cut him, he would be killing it.
All right. The only reason I bring that up is because if it's anywhere near that amount, this is a team that desperately needs so many things. They need an entirely new offensive line, basically. They need some sort of a running game. I mean, they have tons of guys at prime positions that are very good and very high profile, let's face it. But they have so many holes to fill before they can even think about the playoffs, don't they?
This year is going to be so massive for Odell Beckham Jr. And I don't think they could extend him this offseason. I don't think they could do it. I think they would have to wait and let him play out next season and then try to sign him, get the jump on every other team before next offseason.
Can't they franchise tag him?
They could. Yes, they could franchise.
Oh, that would hiss him off pretty much.
But the Giants, I think, next offseason could actually do this. Eli Manning's contract is going to come off the books at some point soon. Once you clear his money out and you have what we anticipate to be a rookie contract quarterback, whether it's Davis Webb or anybody they might draft this year, that money is going to be available. It's not available right now because Eli's taken up so much. So I think logistically, he could get huge money out of the Giants. But he's got to show, one, that he's healthy, two, that he's productive, three, that he's on good behavior, and four, that he's willing to be part of a rebuilding effort. I don't know that all four of those things happen, but those are what I think he would need to even get in the conversation.
And, I mean, Arnie bringing up the point about if they do franchise him, which to me would make plenty of sense in the interim to kind of bridge that gap. in between and get
1 year deal.
But yeah, exactly. It's a 1 year deal at a. I don't know if it's team friendly, but it's not going to be $20 million. That's for sure.
Well, maybe. But he has to be top three paid.
But find out what he is. Make sure he's healthy. You brought up the word healthy. I mean, do we know that he's going to come back as
the
great guy that he is?
Oh, he's
the
fine.
Other and the other thing is, too, is he needs to get his head out of his butt, too. I mean, you need to see some sign that this guy is worth it, both physically and mentally, moving forward.
Dave Gettleman is also a real wild card here because Dave Gettleman, he's out of Carolina because he was a too tough negotiator with franchise icons. That's part of the reason why he's gone in Carolina. I hope people realize that. Josh Norman should be in Carolina still. He's not because Gettleman wouldn't give him the money that he wanted. Greg Olsen and Thomas Davis didn't get those veteran contracts, you know, that people in the organization thought they should get for good service, basically. Gettleman wouldn't play ball with them, and they canned him. So one of two things is going to happen here. Either Gettleman's going to hold true to his form, and he's going to play hardball with Beckham, and either Beckham's going to take a lower deal than he wants, or Gettleman's going to say goodbye, or Gettleman's going to say, being that way cost me one job. I'm going to have to acquiesce on this one and treat Beckham better than I did in the past. One of those two things will happen. I'm very curious to see which
one. But do you think, as Ernie said, if they franchise him and he's going to be furious about that he's going to be the choir boy next year who has 110 catches, 12 touchdowns, and isn't a cancer in the locker room?
Well, he wouldn't franchise them going into this season. It would be next season we're talking. It would be after next season.
Okay,
he's got a contract this year,
next year,
$8 million this season. They can try to extend him this year and give him massive money. They can try to do that and get the jump on everybody else so he's not just an unrestricted free agent and they're bidding against everybody. Or they can let him play out the season, and then they can franchise tag him. They can try to sign him up against everybody else. Or they can just say, you know what? We saw him play this year. He wasn't productive. He was a bad guy. He was a headache. He's gone.
Worst thing that ever happened to a player, franchise tag. What the hell were they thinking? I'd use that. You could use it on him twice or three times. Twice?
I think you can use it.
Well, the Cousins had it twice, and there was rumors they could have done
a
third one.
Yeah, I think it's three.
All right, big boy, let's get ready for it. One more year, because I'm going to franchise tag you.
That'll go over like a lead balloon.
Well, too bad.
You know, the other thing is this. The top 10 wide receivers last year, only three of them made the playoffs.
Yeah.
So when you start talking about giving out big money to a quarterback and big money to a wide receiver, there's not a whole lot of money for everybody else. Look at the top 10 wide receivers. Antonio Brown's number one. The Steelers did make the playoffs and got the divisional round, so they were fine. Texans with DeAndre Hopkins. Nope. Bengals, A.J. Green. Nope. Packers, Devontae Adams. Nope. Now, we know Aaron Rodgers was hurt, but because Aaron Rodgers was hurt, you really saw the flaws of that roster. Julio Jones, he did make the playoffs. Demaryius Thomas did not. Dez Bryant did not. T.Y. Hilton did not. Alshon Jeffrey did. Won a Super Bowl. Doug Baldwin did not.
Out of those 10 you listed, how many would the team say, if we could cut you now and not be on the hook for a dime, or we'll bring you back for that money? I think just about everyone would come back except for Dez Bryant.
I would say Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, and T.Y. Hilton.
I was going to say T.Y. Hilton and Dez Bryant were the two I was going to come up with. So my only point on that is,
those players.
No, every one of those players the team wants back, and I'm still telling the Giants let Odell go, even though the rest of the receivers the team would not want to get rid of him or anything like that. So
also on the 4 minute football fix, I'll keep the music on. The 4 minute
football, the 12 minute.
Yes, the 4 minute football fix is turning into the 10 minute football fix here. So we talked yesterday about the Giants maybe trading down, and I don't think that's the world's worst thing if the Giants trade down. Well, the Cleveland Browns have number one, and their GM John Dorsey is talking about, hey, if you want to offer it, come and offer me for the number one pick. I'm willing to move down. Do you think it'd be smart for the Browns to maybe trade out of number one?
No.
Really?
No. Not number one.
But have you ever seen a year when more people don't know who the number one pick is going to be?
It's Sam Darnold.
Well, that's what you think.
That's what it's going to be.
25 other people who think one other different
listen
person.
No, that's what I know. I promise you it's going to be Sam Darnold.
Okay, write this down.
For a team that's been so snake-bit and horrible over the last million years, and now to give up the number one pick when you have a real quarterback there, and the Josh Rosen is going to be taking it the second pick. So, no, you don't trade your number one pick. You stand up there. You say, we'll take Sam Darnold, and that's your quarterback of the future.
If I'm the Brown... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, everything I've seen on Sam Darnold is anywhere from 1 to 8 in the draft.
If I'm the Browns, I only trade out of number one if I am 1,000% confident that the player that I want at one is sitting there at four.
Yep.
That's it. If the player that I want at all costs, if I'm positive he's going to be there at number four when I pick again, then it becomes worth it. Because if you're gonna give me two more first round picks, if you're gonna let me acquire more draft capital, fine. But if that player you want more than anybody else, if you think he's there at four, right, then it becomes worth it. Otherwise, it's not.
I think they hold all the cards. They could go out and get a Barkley. They'll have Joe Thomas back healthy blocking for him next year.
Maybe he's a podcast star now. I don't know if he's going to play.
He's everywhere. And you get your quarterback. I mean, that's a start of something that you've got to believe is going to be good in Cleveland.
You mentioned Saquon Barkley, so I'll give you since Brady brought up the combine, and I know there's – I have a my co-host on Sunday nights, he is a – like, he'll watch every second of the combine. I mean, like, and sit there and enjoy, and then rewatch it on tape. Anyway, Ian Rappaport, this is what he just put out on Twitter. Oh, boy. Penn State, Saquon Barkley put on a show on the bench. 29 reps at 225.
Great.
I think he'll do okay in the draft. I think I did that yesterday. 29 reps at 225.
So he can lift weights. Great. Does that mean he's going to be a star in the NFL?
No, but you know what? I made fun of the runs and all that and how high you can jump. I don't know if that's so insignificant, to be honest with you.
I agree with Brady's stance on Cleveland. They hold all the cards here. If you get a Barkley and a quarterback that you want, and then you end up getting a couple more first-rounders because you gave up the number one pick, I mean, that's an absolute position of power for a team that certainly needs it.
Did you read Scott in Westford?
Yes, he says if he's the Browns, he takes Barkley from Penn State. He'd take them number one.
He should
also take Patrick. Was it Minka Fitzpatrick from Alabama?
Yeah.
And then make A.J. McCarron their quarterback if they could sign him.
All of a sudden, everybody's in love with A.J. McCarron now because he's a free agent.
No, but I'll tell you, Cleveland is in a very good spot. Very good. They got everything.
By the way, Doug in Champaign says Memorial has a pool so I could race around before the game tomorrow. So.
Oh, that's right. There's one. I think it's downstairs.
Oh, so that's good to know. So
yeah.
I'm going to bring my bathing suit then tomorrow.
Oh.
Should I wear my one piece or just...
bring the Speedo.
Yeah. Well, what's wrong with the thong? What's wrong with that? I don't understand. It's
a disgusting thing I've ever heard.
What's coming up next, Brady?
Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Next on 101.3 ESPN.
Go Lake and win. Welcome back to the huddle. It's time for our newest feature.
Maybe this one will sweep the nation also.
It's time for Big Deal.
Rich, you guys are missing the point. This is a huge deal.
Little deal.
Oh, please, Artie. This is nothing.
Or no deal.
You guys are both wrong. It's in the middle. How am I even still listening to you?
On 101.3 ESPN.
Gosh, I'm hungry.
You're hungry?
Ravioli?
I could go for some ravioli. I
thought that was tomorrow.
Oh, you could bring it tomorrow, too, but how am I going to cook it up? You know, they're going to bring it in a can.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with that?
Don't eat too much ravioli in your Speedo. It's going to get even tighter.
You know what I'm really mad about is that the other day was National Pancake Day, and nobody bought us pancakes.
How about that?
I would go on the IHOP for that.
Nobody brought us pancakes.
You like pancakes? They do nothing for me.
Chocolate chip pancakes do everything for me.
As long as it's drowned in butter and syrup, just like everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
My dad's coming up tonight. He's going to be here for the weekend. So
Coming in the studio today, you said?
He's probably going to be here during Champlain Valley game night.
So he didn't want to meet Rich, is what you're saying. So
he's going to come tomorrow to the remote in Plattsburgh. We're going to ride over on the ferry together.
Okay, good. I'm getting the feeling he's ducking Rich. I don't know. I don't want to. You know.
Yeah, I'm such an awful guy. But so he's probably listening right now.
He's probably relatively close to the listening area.
Okay, so do we have to soften a little bit on his kid?
No.
I mean,
no. He's probably, at this point, probably around Fairhaven, is my guess.
Okay.
So he's starting to get into the listenership.
I'm so proud of you, Brady. I'm so proud of you.
Is he like that? Is he that kind of guy?
We're going to Ken's Pizza Pub tonight downtown.
There you go.
So we're pumped about that. So he's pumped. He's been to Church Street. Last year he came up. Him, Jess, and I went out to Church Street Tavern, and we went out to Manhattan Pizza Pub. This year we're going to Ken's, and during Champlain Valley game night, I'm going to take suggestions as to where else I should take him.
Oh, boy.
So
I can think of about, I don't know, 47 places.
We'll get to other places.
I may go out tonight, too. There's a lot of parties going on.
I wasn't going to go out last night, but I was forced out to trivia, so against my will.
Somebody says I should go to the Hoagie Hut. I don't know what that is.
Oh, because I said I was hungry.
So, they also say they love Ken's.
Yeah.
Ken's is my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Ken's is my favorite place downtown, along with RJ's.
And by the way, some of the waitresses yesterday at the City Sports Club mistaken my son and I for brothers. They're like, "Oh, you guys are brothers."
Yeah. Oh. No, they did not.
Yes, they did. Totally, yeah, absolutely.
I was looking at him. I was like, how come that kid is kind of a good-looking guy if he was a father?
It's just like
it's
just like
weird
me.
Because he's a good-looking guy, but he looks like Arnie.
Here's my,
how is that possible?
Here's my 30 years.
I'm a good-looking guy.
Here's my 30 years difference, brother.
Oh, thank you. All right, let's get the big deal, little deal, or no deal, Brady.
Big deal.
Oh, little, no music?
We got music.
Big deal, little deal, or no deal.
Question one. A college baseball coach in Texas at Texas Wesleyan was fired for saying that his team didn't recruit players from Colorado because they are more likely to fail drug tests. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
Boy, he must be a beaut to play for, I got to tell you that. What is wrong with people? Seriously. I mean, way to go ahead and stereotype everybody in the state of Colorado. What does that mean? Hawaii also? I don't want to know. I can't do Hawaii.
Was it a big deal then, you're saying?
Yeah, it's a humongous deal. I'm surprised they fired him, though. I'm surprised they just didn't say, hey, what are you, a knucklehead?
They also said he got fired because of NAIA violations that have occurred under his watch.
All right, so...
So he should have been fired before that.
I thought they had fired him because of the comment. Or
it's both.
And the place is called Wesleyan, so yes. I'm guessing there's a religious factor to the college education.
It's a big deal. Well, so is like TCU Dallas Baptist has a great baseball team.
Yes.
I mean, they're in the...
They were in the College World Series, not in the Omaha.
Sometimes they're They
played Siena when I was working in Albany in there.
But you know what? To go ahead and to do that... And maybe the kids could have other offers. I don't know. But, I mean, you can't stereotype everybody like that. And then you're going to say, you know, you're going to start stereotyping people in the South, people in the East. I think it's a big deal. I don't like people losing their jobs. I don't know if it's because of the violations or because what he sent the kid. I am curious, though, because the story's not over for me until I find out where the kid's going to go. And hopefully he finds another college. So I want to keep updated on that.
It's only a big deal if other schools follow suit. And with a name like Wesley, and I do, I'm guessing that it's a religious-based education. And if that's the case, maybe somebody has told him, I don't want a bunch of, quote, druggies in this college for a baseball team.
Pepperdine's a faith-based, and it's in California.
Yeah,
that is legalized pot.
Look, the private schools, I mean, look, schools can admit who they want. The private schools can clearly hold themselves to a higher set of standards or a higher set of guidelines. Like BYU has very, very specific rules about when you go to BYU. So that is something that exists. But I'm with Arnie. This is a big deal. One, it's a big deal because he got fired. So therefore, it automatically becomes a big deal. Two, it's a former major leaguer. This guy played with the Texas Rangers until 1994.
What was his name?
I forget his name, honestly.
He
was a 10-year veteran, retired in 1994.
Look up his name. I bet you we know him.
What's the school called?
Texas
Wesleyan. He played with Nolan Ryan. I mean, in Texas.
I bet you we know his name, Rich.
So therefore, it becomes a big deal. He gets fired. He's a former major leaguer. It's not a good look for the university. It's not a good look for the NAIA. And I'm with you, Arnie. Yeah. No stereotyping.
Who is it, Rich?
Mike Jeffcoat used to
pitch. Oh, yeah! Get out of here!
Yep. It was a mediocre pitcher for the Rangers.
And you know what's so funny is that's the only team I remember him is with the Rangers. Well, I'm sure he was a journeyman, but that's all I remember.
And the concern here, too, is that you're just assuming that these kids are going to do drugs at your college because, as I'm reading the story here, they're not taking kids from Colorado just because of the policy.
Right, yes.
If these kids have never smoked marijuana one hit in their life,
they're
still being punished. I changed it to big deal.
That's like BYU saying, no, we don't want to take people from California. We don't like your lifestyle. A lot of premarital sex out there.
Yes.
So we're going to go ahead and deny you entrance to our school.
Question two. Rich, you sent this one to us right before the show. The state of Illinois is working to have a law maybe passed that would ban tackle football prior to the age of 12. Big deal, little deal, or no deal?
I think that's a huge deal. I mean, can we all agree that's a big deal? I mean, and there's three, I believe as I was reading that article, three other states.
Yeah.
So the ball is rolling. Are we getting to that point? I think we are. I mean, the pressure from parents is getting enormous.
Big deal, because I don't think you were here, Brady, when one of our, were you here? One of my listeners attacked me a year and a half ago, so I finally get vindicated a year and a half later when I was reading a New York Times article, I think it was, or New York Post, about how this could be the end of, Pee Wee football. And the guy goes, what are you talking about? Where are you getting your sources from? I go, I'm reading it right from the New York Times, sir. And he ripped me like crazy. I didn't know what I was talking about, blah, blah, blah. It's a big deal because I think it's going to go through, and we're not going to have Pop Warner. And I told you, we should have embraced for this, as I told you a year and a half ago, that this was going to go, almost 2 years ago, that this was going to go on, and it should happen. We know so much more now about concussions.
We're getting to the point where we're going to be watching high school football as touch football.
I don't think we're getting
flag football.
I don't think we're getting to that point. I think this is a big deal, but I don't think it's as big a deal as you think. I don't take it to be the death of football in general. I think it's probably a good modification, okay? I think it's a good modification from the safety standpoint. I think it's a good modification from the teaching of the basic skill set standpoint also. The best way to develop as a basketball player is not to just run out of the court and play 5-on-5 ants to a gumball. It's to break the game down and play 3-on-3. That's how you actually get better playing basketball, is playing 3-on-3,
yeah,
playing 2-on-2, and learning the concepts. If now we take some of the physicality out of the game at a younger age, you can focus on the skill set. So now I think these kids, in some cases, might even get better as they get older. And then when you throw in the physicality piece later, I actually think some of the quality of play we start to see in high schools might actually become better.
You can't play the game of football without tackling. It's like saying, well, let's play basketball, but nobody gets to shoot outside the three-point line. Well, that's part of the game.
Yeah. I mean, and at what age do you suddenly start tackling? And
yeah.
How much you're going to be affected by, say, a 15-year-old kid as a sophomore in high school, and all of a sudden the kid's just blasting you.
12 or 13, that's what they're saying.
You know who's liking this is basketball and baseball.
Yes, you're
because
right.
Because more kids now are going to have to play something, and they'll stay with baseball or even soccer.
Soccer is the same season in a lot of cases.
They'll stay with soccer. Because you won't have to play tackle football till you're, 13 years old?
I still also think you can teach the concept of hitting without hitting in the games. I still think you can do that. I still think you can work on technique, work with the tackling dummy, work with the heads-up program, all those things, and just not have that particular skill transfer to the game. This one doesn't bother me that much.
We've got a bunch of Town Fair Tire texts on real quick. Trevor in St. Albans, there's no hitting in youth hockey until Bantams. Not a huge deal in my mind. Derek in Middlebury is pretty much the same thing. Do you really want a kid last? Read that one, Brady.
No, he's the opposite.
Okay.
Trevor in St. Albans says there's no hitting in youth hockey until age 13, 14. So this isn't a big deal.
Okay.
Derek in Middlebury is the other side. Do you really want a kid who is getting bigger now to learn and have to learn how to hit, teach them younger before they start lifting and getting bigger?
And what did Alex in Moncton say?
He says, take the pads away in football, the form will improve, and they won't start to lead with the head.
You know, people said that if you want the NFL to stop leading with the head, go back to the leather football helmet, and people laughed at that, but they were serious.
Well, it's kind of like, you know what's funny? It was in the book, I forget what the book's called, but it was by Ralph Nader, and it was about driving. They said, seatbelts actually don't make you drive. Seatbelts give you a false sense of security.
Yep.
If you were to drive with a giant spear, Hank, you know, coming out of the steering right. wheel facing right at your chest, that would cause you to right. drive safer because any misstep you would be impaled.
Right. It's like people who spend $1,000 in snow tires think they can drive like idiots on ice and snow. So,
right.
so I think I actually think this is not. It's a big deal because it's a change and a deviation from the norm, but I don't think it's a bad deal. Question three in the huddle: big deal, little deal, no deal. The Jets will reportedly look into signing Malcolm Butler this offseason away from the Patriots. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
I mean, they'll look into it, and they probably will do it, I think. I don't know how much he's going to demand on the open market and how many teams are going to be looking at him. I think that'd be a good place for him. He knows the division. Nothing like the Jets would like better. Oh, what did you just do? You hit a button there.
Now it's better?
Yes. What did you do? I saw you do it.
You
see that? I caught you. You screwed with my microphone.
No, nothing screwed with your microphone.
You did something. I know. You see that,
Rich? You sound like a whole new man.
Yeah.
Actually, to tell the truth, you sound exactly like you did a minute
ago. I don't even know what I was saying, but yeah, they'll sign him. I knew you did something to me.
If we're going to call it a halfway, it's a little deal. I guess that's what I'll call it. But could there possibly be a more inspired, fired up human being to play against the New England Patriots twice a year in this case than Malcolm Butler would be in a Jets uniform?
Yeah, I'm going little deal also. We kind of knew the Patriots weren't going to get Malcolm Butler back, so I don't think I'm surprised at this. You could tell me he was going anywhere and I wouldn't be shocked. It's a little deal because you're right. He'd be playing against the Patriots twice a year. Question four.
I need an answer, though. He's going to give me.
Who? Reliever Tyler Thornburg of the Red Sox threw his first bullpen since having thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. Big deal, little deal, no deal.
You know, that sounds like you know, like you have gas or something like that. That's how bad it is. Now, look, I think
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal. I mean, it's good to, you know, make sure that he's going to be part of the team and 100%. And I mean, he is a big part of the team. You know what? I'll say little deal because I mean, he's not going to be that instrumental. It's just a added plus that you need to go ahead and be able to catch the Yankees. So. That's a good start.
Yeah, I'm going little deal, too, because that guy was really good with Milwaukee. But, I mean, these middle relievers are such a dime a dozen. I mean, how many of them have five or six great seasons or even two to three great seasons, middle relievers? It's all up and down all the time. He was really good. But they gave up a guy in Shaw last year who hit 31 home runs, drove in 101 runs in a straight deal. And they got absolutely nothing in return. I'll say little deal, but as a Red Sox fan, you sure hope he gives you something.
I'll go it's a big deal because I hammered on the Red Sox all year for not really improving their bullpen. This is an improvement to their bullpen if he's able to be back. This was a team that was number one in the American League in bullpen ERA last year, or number two maybe behind Cleveland, but they're in the top three of baseball in bullpen ERA. I think he's a big piece to that pen if he's healthy. You picture him in there, factor him in with Carson Smith, Joe Kelly, Matt Barnes, Craig Kimbrell. I think this bullpen becomes a lot better. I still think they need a lefty, but if Thornburg's there, he's not just a middle reliever. He was an elite setup man.
Yes.
And you lost Addison Reed. You lost Ziegler 2 years ago, who they got to do that in Arizona at the trade deadline. I think this guy is absolutely, if he's right, I think he's a big part of that panel.
Jump to the Gonzaga one for me.
I was going to skip that one.
Why?
Because we added in the
right
football
about that?
One.
Okay.
Question five. Yankees prospect Miguel Andujar hit two home runs today against the Phillies. No, big deal, little deal, no deal.
What's his name? What's
sorry
his name?
To hear that.
I wouldn't know him if he served me breadsticks.
Excuse me, Miguel, can I get some more breadsticks here to the table, please? Who? What am I supposed to? No deal at all. Zero deal. I got zero interest in this guy.
Well, I you know, as somebody who loves spring training, I think he, if he's going to continue to hit, and look, he hit two home runs today against the Phillies, probably against some guy we've never heard of who will be at
Pavetta.
Who will be at
starter.
He'll be at Clearwater in about a week and a half for the rest
starting
of the
season. Starting pitcher named Pavetta.
Pavetta?
Yes.
More never. Breadsticks, Mr. Pavetta.
Never
please.
Heard of him.
I'll say it's a big deal because he's trying to make the decision right. harder for what the Yankees do with right. their roster. And if he doesn't have a spot on their roster, he's just showing off his skill set to another team that might trade for him. I'm going big deal. I think I said big deal on every one of these except Malcolm Butler. Four of five of these were big deal to me.
And question five, Arnie, you were right about Vermont should go to a bigger conference.
Ugh,
we can
stop.
Just shut that up.
No, you're not.
That's funny. I don't see that
it
one.
It says Gonzaga talking to the Big East. Remember, that's what
oh,
I
yeah,
wanted for you.
That makes a lot of sense considering the closest team to them is in Nebraska.
But it goes to show you I was on the right path here. That's exactly what UVM should be doing.
20 years.
They should be Gonzaga to the punch.
20 years of national championship appearance, Final Four appearance, and multiple Elite Eights got them to maybe think about moving up conferences. Big deal, little deal, no deal, over.
That should be a big deal, though. I don't know why we didn't get to
only
that.
Only because you think it should be.
Because I was right about it.
No, see, you like to gloat.
Yeah, know, yeah, because everybody read me about that.
Against the wall every now and then.
But
something
I nailed that one, though, didn't I? I nailed that one to the wall, no doubt
yet.
About that. Brady, what's coming up as we finish up hour one?
Clean up your act, a shortened version.
Next, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Back to the huddle, where you can give us your take at 802-655-6672. Providing Arnie shuts up long enough to let you get a sentence in. 101.3 ESPN.
I still think that's kind of funny that Gonzaga wants to go to the Big East, but you won't give it UVM any credence to that. All right, clean up your act. Brady, I want to go ahead and start.
Yeah.
Mark Schlabach.
Oh, yeah.
Who I've had on my show dozens of times.
Why don't you get him on again?
Because it was when I was working locally in Atlanta. I actually did shows with him. Boy, oh boy, did you screw up ultimately. You botched this whole story. There was never a story. Somebody fed you a line of crap. You better find out who it was. If I was him, I may actually leak who set this out to him because what he got everything wrong, just about everything wrong. Now, supposedly it's not even Miller on the wiretap. I don't even know if there is a wiretap. Man, I got to tell you, what bothers me about some of reporters that we have nowadays, they always want to be first, and it doesn't make a difference if they're right. And back in the day, if you were wrong about a story, you almost got fired. Now, nowadays, I don't even know who's wrong anymore. I don't even know who's first, who's not, because when I look at Twitter, One guy's 3 minutes, one guy's 4 minutes. I don't even care. Just get the story right.
Well,
Rich,
as someone growing up, and my only access to any of this sort of thing was the Boston Sunday Globe baseball column of Peter Gammons. But I mean, remember when he used to do that, and he'd have all these different sources. But the thing was, is he was 100% right on every one of them, and he didn't print it unless it was right. And if nothing else, sometimes people who have been accused of something go to the microphone and try to weasel their way out. Sean Miller press conference today didn't feel like that. That guy was furious.
Yes, yes. And Dewey defeated Truman, too. So we do get things wrong. No doubt about that. Go ahead, Brady.
My cleanup, my act is the Iditarod. The Iditarod starts the dog sled race in Alaska, starts on Saturday. And look, I like animals. I would not say that I'm on the PETA side of things. But when I'm starting to read stories about dog doping, the Iditarod needs to be cleaned up. The Iditarod needs to clean up its act. I get it's a big deal, but I see it more as just – I've always seen the Iditarod as more of a ceremonial thing than something that big money is involved in. And there is big money.
Oh, no,
there's large money prizes in the Iditarod. But if you're going to talk to me about dog doping and dogs dying, then I have a problem.
I don't even know if this is – Susan Butcher?
Susan Butcher.
Didn't she
win
it?
She won many times.
How would we know that? How would we even know that?
Know what? That she won?
Yeah. Where would I pull that out? I couldn't even tell you anybody else in that race.
I don't know.
Other than her.
The only reason I know is because my head, as you found out last night, is full of all kinds of useless information.
I mean, that's just so funny that you're right off the top.
She won it often.
Must have just had big stories.
Does
on
this
her.
Surprise you, though? I mean, when I read this first, I kind of went, oh, brother, really? It's a little bit of a chuckle and ha-ha and doping dogs and things. And then you start thinking.
No, because I've seen it with horses constantly.
Yeah, I mean, so. And I read it and I thought, I'm surprised that this is the first time I've ever heard about something like this happening. It's not a surprise at all to me.
I wonder, you know how the dogs are treated during training and stuff like that, or, you know, if they, you know, they're bred for something. I don't know. I don't know how bad they're treated or if they're treated great. I can't tell you that. So I wonder on that. But there you go.
Hey, got to be a lot more careful now. Remember the Saturday Night Live skit with puppy uppers and doggy downers?
No.
Oh, it's changed a lot since then.
No, I don't remember that one. And I know Brady doesn't, but if I don't remember, Brady's sure as hell not going to remember it. Hour one in the books. Brady's going to have a SportsCenter update. We'll come back, reset. We'll get you ready for Rick Pigeon also. So we got a lot going on to start off hour number two right here on 101.3.
Commercials are over, and the guys are back. The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. All accounted for on a super busy... What day is it? Thursday today?
Today's Thursday.
Why do you have to do that with the microphone every time?
Because I didn't. I wasn't ready.
Whenever we move the microphone, Rich makes that annoying noise.
Look, I could move my microphone. You don't even hear it.
Sorry, I was over trying to answer the phone for that.
No, you did not.
Call that rang the entire sports center thinking we have 17 employees here.
You didn't even get up. You didn't even get up.
Well, I want it to be like Arnie and just make stuff up that makes me sound better.
I looked over and I saw it ringing, but I'm like, oh, I'm not going to answer that.
And as soon as SportsCenter ended, it stopped ringing.
Yeah, so I'm like, I'm not. I'm in the corner here. I got too much to do. I don't have time to get up right now.
We are the station, the three of us.
At the moment, we don't have any interns.
Where's all the interns?
Intern Alec is on school break, so he's not here.
Get out of here. That's a bad excuse.
Why is he dedicating his life to sports radio?
Well, where do they go for spring break? Where do the kids around here go for spring break?
I don't know. Maybe he stays in lovely St. Albans.
Where did you go anywhere for spring break?
No, because I was on the baseball team, so I had games.
Am I the only one that, like, one year I went to Hawaii? Yeah.
Well, you weren't an athlete. We were athletes.
I went to spring training.
I went to Padre Island.
San Padre Island, you don't even know what it's called.
That place was nuts.
It is nuts. I would go within 100 miles of that
place. One year we rented an RV and just drove from Arizona up to Northern California and back.
No, I did the same thing in college that I do now. I went to spring training.
I lived for that. We took some crazy trips out there.
Tell me about it.
That was awesome. That was the good old
time. Surprised we can remember any of them.
Thanks to everybody who showed up for trivia. It was packed. Everybody must have thought I was hosting last night. It was just packed there, Brady.
Well, it was a fun time. Your wife texted me late last night to say I did a great job.
She was probably lying.
You're more conversational. I was talking to him after the show. He's more, when I host it, it's more black and white. It's like, hi, I'm Rich Haskell, and here are the questions.
I tell jokes in between the questions, too. I do like a comedy routine.
Oh, really? Yeah. See, I hate public speaking, so I can't do it very well.
You hate public speaking.
Isn't that bizarre?
But yet you spent your whole adult life being a radio host and doing play-by-play and doing public address announcing.
Yes. None of which people see me.
Public address announcing? They don't see you?
Nope. No, nobody sees
aren't
me.
Aren't you on the court, the side of the
court?
Yeah,
are you on the side of the court in like St. Mike's
games?
Yeah,
but nobody's looking specifically.
Oh, they're all
for,
looking
if
at
I'm
you
now. If I'm standing
at
half court, it'd be even more terrifying. Yeah. No, I hate public speaking. Always have.
I have to give the best man speech at a wedding coming up in July.
Oh, that's
where
I'd rather be on TV. In
have
front
you done
of
that?
I did it once and I completely blew it. And
really?
The marriage only lasted 6 months
because of your speech.
It could have been.
Speech, yeah.
Oh, I was so embarrassed. Have I didn't
you
know
ever,
what to say?
Have you ever given it, Arnie?
Oh yeah, for my brother. I'm very good at that. So,
yeah,
I
was it.
I could speak. I'm fantastic. 10 out of 10.
Yeah,
and modest.
Yeah.
How long did I've heard? 3 minutes or less.
I did. Mine was about 45 minutes. Yeah. No, mine was about like 3-4 minutes, 5 minutes,
okay.
Maybe 10, 20.
Yeah.
Mine was 30 seconds about what a jerk the kid used to be, and then he turned into an okay guy. And
oh,
I'm really
there you
proud
go,
of him.
Rich. There
was
you go. Wow.
I was absolutely terrified.
Wow. That's
wow.
I was told, do not use the joke like, oh, it's amazing Sam could get a wife now if you saw his luck back in the day.
Yeah.
They said, don't do that one.
No, do that one. Do that one. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm taking that one out of there.
Do you need have you ever started writing a speech? Because
it's all in my head.
Okay, because Town Fair Tire text line, if you want to give the opening joke for Brady in his speech, you can just text that over 802-655-6672.
I don't have it on tap right now, but the best opening line of any best man speech is like in Wedding Crashers when the guy goes, after my 9th stint in rehab, Craig was the only one who still believed in me. And I thank God every day for sending me a friend like Craig.
You should do that,
I love
then.
You, man.
You should do that after my 9th stint in rehab.
Yeah, you think anybody will notice? We may all be
well,
in
that
rehab.
That is awesome.
This show.
Tell everybody where we're going to be tomorrow, too, as I'm excited about that. I'm going to go buy myself a SUNY Plattsburgh shirt.
You know what? We should ask for some SUNY Plattsburgh shirts tomorrow.
I'm going to go do that.
I'm going to reach out to them. And if people at Plattsburgh are listening right now, can we get some T-shirts? We're going to be broadcasting tomorrow, Memorial Hall.
I wear a medium.
Arnie wears like a triple XL.
For what, your arm?
We're going to be
broadcasting
out at Memorial Hall tomorrow. The Cardinals are in the Division III NCAA Men's Basketball Championships first round. We're going to be there 4 till 7. There's two games, 5:30 and then 7:30 for the Plattsburgh game, so we know it's going to be packed, and we look forward to seeing everybody there.
And what a weekend. I mean, you're talking about not just Middlebury. I mean, not just Plattsburgh. The Middlebury men are down at Eastern Connecticut in the NCAA Division III. Southern Connecticut.
Southern Vermont.
Southern Vermont. Where did Southern Connecticut come from?
What's wrong?
I'm having a trip back to last summer. Everything was Connecticut. Southern Vermont is in the D3.
Yeah, they're
playoffs.
Taking on Wesleyan.
And the UVM hockey team is playing tonight down at UMass. They're doing the Thursday-Friday playoff.
Yeah.
St. Mike's.
Men's hockey, they're taking on St. Anselm in the really the de facto national championship. That's on Saturday out at St. A. We got the UVM men's hoop team. They're in the playoffs. We got all kinds of stuff.
Can I read Adam's tweet or no?
I haven't looked at it yet.
Let's edit it.
Well, I think you can. I don't think it's that bad.
For the orgy.
You just read it on the air. That's the opening for your speech. I think you should do it, Brady.
No, I'm good. Thank
Adam
you.
Adam says, open up with who's here for the orgy? And I think you should totally lead with
You talk about lightening the mood.
I'm good. I can't have one drink beforehand. I need to make sure all of my facilities are about me in that speech.
I gave away an award for the top I thought I was giving away to one of the top Division II football players in the country when they asked me to give away an award. I didn't know it was all predominantly black conference.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got there at the dinner that night, my wife and I were the only white people out of like 500. And I said, I'm going to go up and give the award. Now I was giving the award to the Heisman for like Division II or NAIA. I said, I got a great joke. And my wife's like, don't you dare. I didn't even tell you the joke. She goes, I don't care what it is. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. But I did it anyway. I walked up there, and before I presented the word, I go, well, now I know what an Oreo cookie feels like.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah, all right.
Is that bad?
Nah.
Nothing but crickets.
Nah.
You're like, what did he say? What did he say? Oh, my goodness. I just wanted to crawl away. Brady, what's coming up right now? Who are we talking to?
Well, we're going
to
go out to the phone line and find ourselves a guy we spoke to last year around this time. It's our buddy Rick Pigeon. Rick Pigeon, a Fairfax, Vermont native, also on Kurt Busch's NASCAR pit crew. He's the gas guy for Kurt Busch. They won the Daytona 500 just last year. The Daytona 500 from this year just wrapped up 2 or 3 weeks ago. So Rick Pigeon from Fairfax, Vermont, on the line with us. Rick, thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing good, buddy. I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, I'm not as good because I owe you an apology because I hate being wrong and I hate messing up. So I texted you for this interview, and I spelled your name, Rick, R-I-C, instead of R-I-C-K, and I feel horribly about that.
I've been called way worse things than that.
Well, I appreciate that that reprieve. And let's start with this. Your team won the Daytona 500 a year ago. This year, Kurt Busch not able to finish the race because of an accident. What happened this year?
Oh, man, it was close. We were having a great race. Just got towards the end there, and things always towards the end of these speedway races get a little hectic. And, you know, thought we were in the right position, you know, two laps to go leading the race, and just circumstances, you know. And it's that's just part of the racing. Part of the racing at super speedways now, you're never comfortable till you cross that checkered flag.
Now, the team led for 16 laps of that race. So how good were you feeling at one point?
Real good. You know, for us, it was a great speed week. You know, we felt like we had a lot of speed in the car, and, you know, Kurt was happy, and all of Stuart Haas Racing as a whole, you know, we all felt like we had good cars. So, I mean, it was good speed weeks for us.
When the carnage happens in a NASCAR race, is that something that is a – can you guys see that from the pit crew area? Is it something the driver sees coming? Is it something that's totally dependent on what other drivers are doing, or a mix of all three?
A little bit of all three. I mean, there's some different slots during the race where, you know, everybody's just going to go out there and ride for a little while just to, you know, save something for the end. But, you know, the last couple, 20 laps, somewhere like that, you know, you feel it ramp up a little bit. And, you know, the anticipation of something bad or good is right around the corner. It's always there towards the end of the race.
Now, what is the feeling like when you see your driver in an accident? What's your first reaction?
Little gut wrenching, you know, to know you were that close. You know, you've been down there, you know, for the whole week of speed weeks. You know, getting to this point, you've made it this far, and you know you're two laps away from finishing the race, and not only with a chance to win, just to have a car to bring home in one piece. It takes the wind out of your sails a little bit, but knowing that you have 37 other races that pay the same amount of points, you know, there's to be. Back-to-back winners at Daytona 500. Not too many people have done it, so that would have been a pretty cool thing to accomplish. But you just have that feeling, you know, at the end of every race that something bad is going to happen. So
now I am NASCAR novice, so I'll ask you this: what impact does the start position of your car play in how the race gets run?
At places like the Daytonas and the Talladegas, where you know drafting is so important, the where you start isn't really indicative of, you know, how the race is going to go. You get to some of these other mile-and-a-half racetracks, what we like to refer as intermediate racetracks, you know, it matters a lot because it means picking your pit stall, you know, guys that are around you on pit road, about, you know, openings on pit road coming in so the drivers can get in and out easy, and just not knowing that you don't have to pass that many cars to get to the front or stay in the front. You know, it's pretty big at those type of races. So the qualifying, it does make a difference nowadays.
Rick Pidgeon, he's a Fairfax, Vermont native. He's on Kurt Busch's NASCAR team. Just finished up the Daytona 500 a couple weeks ago, and he's here with us on the huddle on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Over the course of a race, how many fill-ups will a driver have?
Last week in Atlanta, it's a pretty big tire wear racetrack, so that was on the high side. So I think we did 11 stops last week. Going to a place like Vegas, which is a fairly new repave, you know, tires will last a little longer, so it'll be, you know, 6 to 7, somewhere in that range. But you probably average racetracks probably 8 times a race.
And what is the, like, I'm sure, obviously, this is the goal. Like, what's the average time? Like, what's the goal you're trying to hit in a pit stop? Do you want it under 10 seconds? Is it under 30 seconds? What's the number?
Well, we've gone through a few changes this year as far as NASCAR made some changes to pit crews this year where they took a one man away from us. And they mandated these pit guns that aren't as, let's say, fast as what we had in the past. So we went through a dramatic change in off season. So last year, where we thought, you know, a high 10-second, low 11-second stop would be a good stop, to this year, our best stop to date on pit road, I think, is almost a 13.85, a 14-second stop. So it's kind of too early in the year to tell how fast we can make these stops now. It's just trying to do everything that we did last year with one less man over the wall.
You mentioned nearly 40 races in the NASCAR season. What is your schedule like? Now, you're based in Virginia now, not Vermont, if I'm not mistaken. How often are you home?
I'm actually in North Carolina.
Okay.
So I'm home. I mean, really, as far as my race day duties, I fly in on Sunday mornings or whatever the race morning is, you know, and then fly home Sunday night. So I'm at the shop Monday through Thursday doing my, you know, 9-to-5 job, and then I travel on Sundays only. So, I mean, it's a kind of an odd schedule, but normally I don't have to spend the whole weekend at the racetrack.
Now, we talked about this last year, but I'm going to ask you again because I think a year later it holds merit still. So you are from Fairfax. How did growing up in Vermont develop your love of NASCAR?
I think it's just the competition aspect of it. You know, it's to know that you had your hands on something and to see the end result, whether it be in victory lane or top five or whatever it might be, just to know that you've had your hands on something that necessarily wasn't, the outcome was in your control, but you helped that person get there. I think that's the motivating part of it, and always try to make things, you know, as light as you can or make the cars as fast as you can. I think that's the part that still keeps me going and, you know, liking what I do.
Did you get into it at a really young age, or is it something that you developed as you got older?
Man, it was definitely, to be honest with you, I didn't have any aspirations of doing anything on NASCAR when I was a kid.
Wow.
And then I got, I had some friends back at home that I worked at the Automaster there in Shelburne.
Yeah.
They had some late models in there, and well, come give us a hand. So that's kind of how that started. And I did that for 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I think that's where it, you know, the traveling aspect of it and working on the race cars at the shop and then working at the cars at the racetrack, that was when I got into it then. I definitely didn't anticipate this when I was a kid.
How many experiences did you have growing up going to Thunder Road or anything?
Really none until I started helping Jamie and Chris Fisher. I mean, that was my first, never had I been to, you know, Catamount when I was a kid, Airborne, Thunder Road, all the places, you know, that were, when I was a kid, that were up and running. So the first time I rolled into Thunder Road on a Thursday night with the Fisher boys was the first time I'd ever been there, so.
That's unbelievable. And, you know, we think of NASCAR as a Southern sport stereotypically, but when you go around the country, do you see, you know, it being more widespread than that and continuing to grow?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the hard part for us nowadays is we've got so many of the you know, the old-time fans that remember how it was back in the day, and I don't think kids now really latch onto it like, you know, like I did when I was 16 or 17 year old, you know, they've got other things going on. So try to see the next step in the fan base, where that's going to come from is the interesting part for me, you know, and it's all about the drivers and what drivers they like, from whatever their sponsors are from Monster Energy, you know, or M&M's. It all depends, yeah, on how they associate with those certain cars. So it's going to be interesting to see how the next step goes in growing the fan base.
Rick, we'll get you out of here on this question. Vermont is the only state with a governor who is also a race car driver. How cool is that? Come on, pretty cool for Governor Scott.
Yeah, we racing still all the time, you know, and you know, Pete Duto and all those guys that field car for him. I mean, that's who I started racing with, you know, and I can't remember, it was a little while ago, and my son had a birthday, and I put something on Facebook about it, and then Phil replied to it, and I showed my son, and I was like, see, this is the governor of Vermont is giving you a birthday shout-out. So it's pretty cool. You know, you don't see that very often, and it's definitely a pretty cool thing.
Rick Pigeon, crew for Kurt Busch, a Daytona 500 winner, originally from Fairfax, Vermont. Rick, we appreciate the time. Continued success, continued luck. 37 more races to go for you guys, so lots of success coming, I'm sure.
All right, buddy. I appreciate it.
I like listening to that guy. Brady, you should have said at night when you want to go to the gas and sip. Do you ever say, hey, let's take Kurt's car? Let's hop in the car.
He said he's not with him all the time.
I know that, but wouldn't it be great? Hey, let's just take the car, man.
I often wondered about that, if maybe just once, you know, maybe just
let's do some donuts or
let's
something
just
in the
infield. Take the car. Yeah, do some donuts in the school parking lot.
How many speeding tickets does he have, do you think?
Kurt Busch?
Or even Rick. I mean, can you imagine? Just even though he works on the crew, I'd be itching to get, you know, pushing it to the metal and want to get out there.
It's a hell of a way to meet people.
Yeah. I mean,
hey,
after
look
watching
at my car.
After everybody else is speeding around, I want to get my Honda and speed around too. Let me go ahead and hit 100 and something miles an hour in my car also. But good to hear from Rick Pidgeon, of course, a NASCAR pit crew member in the Kurt Busch crew. So good interview there. Brady, what is coming up next, Brady?
It's our daily spring training update.
Oh, boy.
What did Hanley Ramirez say about Hanley Ramirez?
Next on 101.3 ESPN.
Step one, watch sports. Step two, talk about sports. Now, back to the huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Let's go!
All right, flying on by. Welcome back. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. So much going on. We got some UVM stuff to get to also. Real quick, Mario in Colchester gave you an opening for your speech. Today's an emotional day. Even the cake is in tears. T-I-E-R-S.
That's good.
I like that.
Well,
that only
works if you spell it immediately, because that's not funny, but there has to be a visual.
I like Shane in Burlington that says, this speech won't contain anything controversial about Brad. I'll only talk about the positives. Thank you and good night. See, stuff like that is what you need to do, Brady. That's how you come up with a
good speech. Now you got to make him cry.
You got to get all sappy and stuff
like
that?
After my ninth stint in rehab, Craig was the only one who still believed in me.
Hit him with a sympathy, immediately.
Hold on, I'm going to find that now. Hold on.
All you have to do is Google great first, what are you called? Best man speeches.
Yeah, I think.
Is this going to be a large wedding, like 200 people or something like that?
Larger. You know, more family. Hold on here.
So after my ninth stint in rehab, Craig was the only one who still believed in me. Been sober now for 8 months.
I like that.
And I thank God every day for sending me a friend like Craig. I love you, man.
That's how you got to do it.
Totally steal that exact line.
Right, that's it.
That is totally it. That's the best,
assuming
man.
Nobody in the wedding party has ever seen
what
that
actor
movie?
Is that? Do you know? I don't even know who
it was.
That
the guy, the brother in the show According to Jim back in the day.
I haven't seen that one, no.
Oh, Jim Belushi.
Yes, Joe Campbell.
Oh, I don't know who that is, but that's an awesome speech. I like that. You totally got to throw that in there. By the way, if you have more, 802-655-6672, because people are sending them in. Oh, like crazy. So, because I'm not quick enough to go ahead and write a speech like that. All right, Brady, I know you have so much. Oh, Brady was all excited because I gave him a spring training 4-star prospect. And you're like, oh, see? Look at that, prospects. That's what you need, prospects. Who is this, Luis Robert? But we never, nobody here, between the three of us, we never even heard of him, and he's like the biggest prospect in baseball.
No, it's Moncada for the White. You're talking about White Sox.
Yeah.
Moncada, Kopech. Robert Giolito. These are all guys
on
the White Sox.
Yeah, well,
The Red Sox and Yankees have World Series dreams. But before they can head north, they're working on the backfields in the Florida heat. This is your daily spring training update on The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Look at that.
That's impressive.
Wow, look at you.
You've got that big voice guy doing everything.
That's right.
Maybe you could tape him doing a wedding speech.
Doing the best man speech. Maybe I'll have the best man speech recorded when I get there. Just play it.
Bill's my best friend ever.
Right, what do we got for spring training up? How are my Mets doing? I haven't even looked.
Don't care.
I'll tell you.
So, Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe yesterday tweeted, quote, "The outrageous Hanley Ramirez pronouncement of the day, I'm going 30-30. Write that down." As in,
does that mean 30 home runs, 30 strikeouts?
30.
30 home runs, 30 steals. Do we think Hanley has any chance of going 30-30?
He has a chance of going the first 30, an outside chance of it, if he gets enough at bats. That's assuming he gets off to a good start.
How many stolen bases did he have this year?
He's never had double-digit steals ever in his Red Sox time.
He hasn't had... I mean, look, Hanley has hit 30 home runs twice in his career, 2008 and 2016. He hasn't stolen 30 bases since 2010 and hasn't stolen 15 since 2012.
But, you know, I heard that and I thought to myself, can't stolen bases just be something that you make up your mind that you're going to focus? I always looked at stolen bases sort of as rebounds. You just make up your mind that you're going to do it, and you can will yourself to put up big numbers in certain categories.
Is it tougher to steal bases now than back in the day for whatever reason?
Oh,
I don't
absolutely.
Know why. Why?
Because the catchers have cannons.
No, you know
and
what?
The ball's coming in at 102.
I'll tell you why I think it is. Back when we were in baseball, the starting pitcher lasted 6, 7, 8 innings, and they were fatigued by then, and they'd probably give up a couple extra stolen bases. Now you got a guy coming in the 5th, the 6th, the 7th, the 8th.
Yep.
And their job is to get one out, two outs, right, and make sure nobody steals a base. I think it's tougher to steal a base now, Brady.
Tougher to steal bases because of the contracts. You can't let these guys who are worth so much more money than they used to be go out there and risk getting injured. That's why once guys get big money, for the most part, they stop running. Well,
and they say it's worthless.
They do say it's worthless.
I don't understand that. Look, I'm not a metrics guy like you millennials, Brady. I can't imagine going from first to second. That the risk, the reward risk factor is not worth taking a chance.
But there's a lot of guys. I mean, Trout's numbers for steals are down a little bit. He's hit, what, he had 20-something, I think, or maybe. He had a bunch last year, but they're not anywhere. You know, Mookie's are down. I don't think Mookie's suddenly going to be that guy who steals 40
when
bases.
When you steal 90% of, successful 90% of the time, you should be doing it more. Right.
But there are guys like D. Gordon who that's the only thing they do.
Yes.
I mean, there are certain guys that know they're not going to hit 28 home runs, so they take their chances and they do nothing but steal bases.
As far as Hanley goes, I'll say this. No, I don't think he hits 30-30. I don't think he does that. But however,
right,
he could hit 30 home runs. You are right about that. If he gets enough at-bats, he could hit 30 home runs. So I'm just going to look and say that that's possible. As far as steals go, I don't think he's going to get it, but I do think he's going to run more if the team lets him than he has in the past. You talk about, as I just said, when these guys get worth a lot of money, they stop running because they don't want to risk injury. Hanley Ramirez doesn't have that anymore. He's fighting for a roster spot next season. He's fighting for a job, essentially. And if he doesn't hit his 500 at-bat option, he's going to become a free agent. So he's got a reason to play more motivated this year and to do more things that make him valuable. I see him running more than the past, although I don't think he hits 30.
And where the hell is he batting that he can steal 30 bases?
Well, that's another thing. I mean, if he's hitting with J.D. Martinez at the plate and he's on first base,
he ain't stealing nothing.
Well, I'm somewhat all
you
for him going to second.
No.
Martinez is a 300 hitter. He's a contact guy. You know, put yourself in scoring position for him.
I think he's got a chance to. I think Hanley's going to have a better year than people think. I think he could hit 25 home runs, and I think he could steal 15 bases. And I think if he did that, Red Sox fans would not only be happy, I think they'd be thrilled. As long as the average is above 265, I think people would think that was a great year for him. I don't think he runs enough to get 30. I don't know that he plays enough to get 30. But, Arnie, you sent this over to me earlier. You were reading a Red Sox blog that thinks that the first base situation is going to cause some controversy between Ramirez and Moreland. I think that's one thing that's going to be largely okay for the Red Sox.
Why is that?
Because I think Hanley gets first crack to play more, and I think Moreland is okay in a subsidiary role.
Yeah, but I think in the article they said Moreland was actually put up better numbers, or was it? Oh no, it was Ramirez that put up better numbers.
Moreland was really good at the beginning last season.
Yeah, they're both pretty much the same guy offensively, aren't they? I mean, Moreland's, some power, not much average, no speed.
Moreland's better defensively.
Moreland is better
defensively.
But Moreland also has said, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. So if Hanley plays well and justifies his time, I don't think Moreland's going to be mad. And if Hanley plays poorly, I think the Red Sox could just cut bait with him midseason like they did Sandoval last year, knowing but they're not going to have to pay his vesting option next year. So if he becomes a malcontent and he's bad, then they get rid of him.
All right, what's the next one? What other spring training report you got?
Rick Porcello threw 2 scoreless innings today with 4 strikeouts for the Red Sox. How encouraged are you and how important is he to this Red Sox
it's
team in 2018?
Not the 2 scoreless, it's the 4 strikeouts I'm impressed by. Now, I don't know who he did. He strike out number 85, 96.
No, he started, so he faced most of the Houston Astros, the world champions.
I mean, sometimes the starters come in late in the games also. So, yeah, I want to know who he struck out and on what kind of pitches he struck them out on.
Looking, I can tell you that.
Wow! That's phenomenal. That's even bigger than I even imagined. So, if this was big deal, little deal, no deal, it'd be big deal. I mean, strikeout four looking when you're in spring training and you're up there hacking anyway. I think that's a pretty big thing.
I will tell you in a second who he struck out, and I'm not recognizing a lot of these names. Fisher.
Derek Fisher, he's a major league player.
Played for the Lakers.
Evan Gattis.
Major league player.
M. Gonzalez.
Gonzalez. Marwin Gonzalez. Major league player.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, it wasn't Correa did play, but he didn't strike out. But, I think Porcello is hugely important in this whole situation because we have no idea what he is. Is he the typical first 8 years of his career, 14-14 guy? Is he the Cy Young 22-4 guy, or is he a guy that stunk up the joint last year? I have no idea. If you can get back to him being 14-12-ish, then I think he'll be fine.
I don't think he's as vital to the Red Sox success as the guy you mentioned to me yesterday that we don't ever talk about, and that's Drew Pomeranz.
Yeah.
And Drew Pomeranz is the guy that we never speak about. And part of it's because he was really bad 2 years ago. Not even really bad. He was an all-star with San Diego. Yeah. When they brought him over, he didn't perform like you wanted him to in the
hurting.
Second half. He was hurt.
Yeah.
Last year won 17 games. He's got one of the best curveballs in baseball. If he can repeat what he did, think about how good this team is. If he falls back to 14-14, then how much worse off is this team next year or this upcoming season? Pomeranz, I think, was such a surprise last year. They need him to replicate that closely. Porcello, as you said, we kind of know what he is. He had one outlier really good year. If he's who he was all along, then fine. Pomeranz is the guy I'm more interested in.
But he's had one Porcello year, one outlier Cy Young year, and then another outlier 17 loss year. So, I mean, what is he? That's the thing. I mean, he's had three completely different years for the Red Sox. The other thing about the Pomeranz situation, man, did that come out of left field, no pun intended. There was a great ESPN article yesterday about each team's most underappreciated player.
Oh, you were telling me about that.
And I had no idea. And I mean, I listened to every game. I had no idea that Drew Pomeranz had those numbers. He had an ERA of 3.3 with 174 strikeouts and 173 innings. Talk about under the radar.
Not bad, not shabby.
Last one on the Yankees today. CC Sabathia pitched for the Yanks, and he looked pretty good, Rich.
He threw nothing but strikes. Two innings, no hits. And somebody was saying they threw, like, out of their first 52 pitches, 46 of them or something like that were strikes. That's what you want to see. And he's not grooving them. They didn't hit him hard. He pitched very well today.
But, Brady, you asked the question, how important is he to the Yankees' success, though? And I think that's like 2%. And you're like, well, wait, what are you talking about? The Dodgers lost Clayton Kershaw, didn't miss a step. I mean, he was certainly a lot more important to the Dodgers than Sabathia is for the Yankees. Plus, I mean, they're kind of rich in pitching. Sure, it cuts the margin.
No, they're not rich in pitching.
Well, they got four other good starters out there, do they not?
Well, do they? Tanaka and Gray are always one injury away from being in trouble.
I was just going to say, it just the margin of mistakes is slim there. But that doesn't mean you can't bring up one of your great prospects and have him take your place. If the Dodgers can go without Clayton Kershaw and not miss a beat and still win 90-plus games, I would think the Yankees could do the same.
I don't know. I think CC Sabathia is really important because, as Buster always says, Tanaka's one pitch away from his arm exploding, and Gray has been hurt a lot the last few years. So you don't know what you're going to get there. Severino, I think, is clearly the up-and-comer. He's probably your number one starter. Sabathia was sort of Pomeranz-ish last year. Came out of nowhere. Nobody had any big plans for him. Pitched really well. And I think when you're looking at Tanaka, Gray, Sabathia, and Montgomery as your 2, 3, 4, 5, with some health issues, with some inconsistencies, I think CC Sabathia is important. He can't go 4-11 this year.
I think he's important that he makes all his starts. I think it's important that he provides that consistency and keeps you from having to bring up prospects too early or overextend prospects. The team is so good offensively, they can handle him having an ERA of 4-7, I think. I think he can go 10-8 with an ERA of 4-7, and fine, because they'll just hit their way into wins.
They all can. All those guys can do that, and they'll still win 15 games.
If he's good, then great, but I think him being available is the most important thing for him. It's amazing, though, for me to just watch him pitch, because it's really, really hard to be willing to reinvent yourself. And I'm watching, you know, we joked earlier, well, Arnie joked, callously, by the way, about Felix Hernandez getting hit by a line drive on Monday.
Which is missing one spring training start.
I'm watching Felix pitch, and I'm like, this guy still thinks that he throws 95, 96. This guy still thinks he can get 12 strikeouts a game. And he clearly, it's hard for me to watch him pitch now because he's not willing to come to grips with what he now is. CC Sabathia not only has come to grips with that, he is embracing it. He'll throw 83 mile an hour slop up there and you'll roll over it and he'll go deep into the game because you'll get yourself out. Yep. That's what I wish Felix would start doing, but Sabathia is amazing for me to watch.
Sort of the went from a thrower to a pitcher scenario that you hear every now and then.
Now my jovial level back up to 10 when he got hit by the pitch. Since he's only missing one spring training start. Jovial level back up to 10.
You're a shaky human being.
And you're on mute now.
Wow. He's gone.
Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Local news, UVM men's basketball. They've got a playoff game this weekend, and they've got some honors rolling in today.
Next on 101.3 ESPN.
Lines are now open. Get ready to call in at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, remember now, first round game, Saturday, 7 o'clock tip-off, Maine in town. What are they, the number 8 seed?
Yep,
they are.
Number 8.
Number 8. So, so there's not... any play-in game before that? No.
Nope.
So
Binghamton is no luck.
Binghamton, the season's over for them.
And one of these years, they're finally going to add a 10th team, so they'll have an even amount of teams.
Maybe they'll add Gonzaga.
Yeah, that'll happen. Can you imagine?
Oh, that's so funny.
Hey, we're heading out to Spokane this weekend. You want to fly or drive?
I love that. So it was fun last year when they had their run, and then, of course, they were losing to Albany in the finals, came back. They were down by 10 to win it and get themselves into the tournament and – right now, they could be like a first-round matchup for University of Arizona. A little nervous about that. I'd hate to see that. All right, Brady, what kind of awards are we talking about for UVM men's basketball?
Well, lots of postseason awards for the Catamounts. Let's start with the big one. Player of the Year, Trabell Haynes, for the second consecutive season. Really unbelievable what Trabell Haynes did this year. And I mean, there were several games. Once Anthony Lamb went down, he went from a guy who would score 12, 13 a game to – 20-27. I remember the Dartmouth game where he had, 27. He put up big numbers early in conference play. He's carried this team offensively. His ability to score, to finish at the rim, to distribute, unbelievable year that he's had.
And that 27 was after a knee injury that had everybody, really on edge at Patrick Gym. But, just kind of a side note, I absolutely love, and for those of you that have been around here a long time will certainly like this too, the fact that the Player of the Year in the America East is known as the Kevin Roberson Player of the Year Award.
Yeah, you were saying that.
And he might have been the single nicest person I have ever come across involved in UVM basketball, along with Tom Brennan, and they were just best pals. And he was absolutely tragically killed in a car accident in his hometown of Buffalo. Mm. And he was one of the greatest players you'll ever see. His number 33 is on the wall. Mm. They retired it immediately. And I just think it's really cool that a UVM guy for the last couple of years have won something called the Kevin Roberson Award.
What I like about Trey is that he always wants to ball at the end of the game with a tied or down by one or whatever it is. He wants the guy. He wants to be the guy taking the shot. So I always love guys like that. Yeah. Not afraid of the ball. Doesn't want to pass it away and have somebody else shoot it.
It seems like he always has his hands on the ball he's around it.
Yeah, and he averaged 15 points a game. And think about this. At how many mid-majors does a team lose their most impactful offensive player and they don't lose a beat?
Yeah.
I mean, this team goes 15-1 this year and they don't do that in the league without Trabell Haynes. And I go back to my first memory of Trabell Haynes. I was working at UAlbany throwing t-shirts in the crowd. So I was at every single game and I was also working for the radio station covering it, but I was throwing t-shirts in the crowd too, making a little extra cash. So firing up the troops. So UAlbany was in the middle of a season where I think that year they went 15-1 in the league also. They were really, really good. They made the NCAA tournament. And they beat Vermont. It was at Sefke Arena. And I thought to myself, this freshman point guard defending Evan Singletary, who was an all-conference player for UAlbany, who had hit a game-winning buzzer beater up here against UVM, I think the following season at Patrick Gym, I was like, this freshman defending him all over the court is really, really good. This kid who's ball handling and getting to the hoop at will is really, really good, and it's cool to see 4 years later it manifest itself in maybe two NCAA tournament trips and two players.
Is he playing after?
I think he's going to play after it. And now remember, last year he declared for the NBA draft just to kind of see where he's at. I wouldn't be shocked if he gets a D-League or a G-League look like Ethan O'Day did a couple years ago for UVM. Wouldn't be shocked if that happened. Overseas is definitely an option. He's from Canada. There is a Canadian professional league, if I'm not mistaken, also. He's going to have options.
I'll work with him when he gets done.
Oh,
I'll work
stop. On his... Anyway, back to reality. He's a creator. I mean, he's one of the best creators I've ever seen at Patrick Gym. I mean, how many hundreds of times do you see him standing at the top of the key and you could just tell his mind's going 100 miles an hour? How am I going to do this? There's five guys, much larger guys standing in front of me, and somehow I'm going to turn this into an easy layup, probably an and one. He did it 100 times.
His ability to finish with both hands around the rim is extremely impressive to me. So he's had a great year, and this team continues to get better. He's also on the first team. Let's kind of go continuing down. Drew Urquhart is on the second team with Ernie Duncan. And Drew Urquhart, to me, one of the absolute key figures.
Unsung hero.
Of this team. Yep. I don't even know that it's unsung. I think people recognize how good he is. I think people give him his due. I think it's more came out of nowhere. For a guy who didn't play a lot his first 3 years and didn't have a ton of opportunity, now, he came right out, hit a couple of threes against Kentucky to start the season, and hasn't looked back. That was with Anthony Lamb there, and with Anthony Lamb gone, they don't do what they do without him.
Yeah. What was the first thing we all said on this show 5 minutes after we found out about the Lamb injury? Everybody looked and said, it's Drew Urquhart's time. It's him. He's got to do it.
The season was over.
He has got to do it. We said, Drew Urquhart, I don't know. He's like an 8-4, maybe a 10-5 kind of guy. He turned himself into a lot more than
I thought
that.
Henson was going to be second team. I'm surprised he's down there at third team. That's a little underrated.
I thought Urquhart was going to be first team, but I look at the first teamers, and I'm not sure who you bump out of there.
Well, the America East overall depth this year, I said this from the start, I really thought was really good. I thought you saw more teams. I mean, the playoff seedings weren't set until the last day of the regular season. You saw more teams that could beat anybody on any given day. UMBC went from a perennial bottom feeder to finishing second or third in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, Albany, a team that's right at first or second usually, finishes fourth in the league.
Yeah.
Stony Brook is a team that finishes out of the top four. Stony Brook finished third, I think.
Yeah, but Stony Brook definitely dropped. I mean, Stony Brook for anyone new in town, Stony Brook was we had just huge games against them, right down to the wire games. They won half of them, UVM won half of them over the last 3 or 4 years, but they took a hit this year. I remember Albany starting out slow. They were 12-3.
Yeah, they started out great.
And they had a really tough schedule, a non-conference schedule, and they hung in and won a couple of those games. I think they beat Louisville or somebody.
They almost beat Louisville by
a point. They looked like, oh, here we go again with Albany. Then the America East starts, and it's like they start losing.
And they lose to Hartford.
Yeah, I mean, I remember thinking, how do you lose to Hartford if you're Albany? It turns out Hartford was pretty good.
Hartford finished third. UMBC finished second. So Stony Brook did finish out of the top four, which is unbelievable.
And I'm an Ernie guy. Thumbs out. A shout out to Ernie because he had a good year, too. So give him his credit.
Yeah, he is a complete player. Yeah. I mean, he was on the all-defensive
team again this
year.
He's gritty. I love that just gritty, gutsy type guy. That's what I like.
You look at his stats and you go, how's that a second teamer? You know, it's because he does everything.
I like what he did this year in transforming his game a little bit from being only a three-point shooter to being a guy who could get to the rim also. I remember looking at him last year thinking, I want to say he shot 180 threes last season and like 30 free throws. So you talk about a guy who's shooting six times as many threes as free throws. What does that show you? It shows you he doesn't go to the hoop.
And you can defend that.
And this year he transformed himself and not only being able to go to the hoop, but being willing to go to the hoop. And I was very impressed by that.
Now what about Coach Becker, coach of the year?
Co-coach of the year with the guy from Hartford because they went from pretty much close to the bottom of the league to finishing third.
What is that, like ceremonial? We'll give it to him also, but Coach Becker really deserved it.
Becker won it last year. So
I know that, but he only lost one game this year. Would he have to go undefeated to go ahead and win it this year?
So we'll put someone else's name on it?
Yeah, we know Becker really deserves it, but we want to go ahead and give something to the other guy. So let's just have co-winners because we have to show that he did something well. You know?
Well, a lot of people look at this, and I mean, you got to remember last year when they ran the table, they won absolutely every award. You know, I mean, you've got to distribute it a little bit more and give Hartford some credit. But, I mean, the thing is you figure with a record of only one loss in the league, there's got to be more than just Trey Bell Haynes on the first team. But then you look at the other guys, Joe Cremo, Tanner Leisner, Jarius Lyles from UMBC, Jihad Thomas, who is a scoring machine for UMass Lowell. Who do you take out of there and put another UVM guy in? I'm thinking Urquhart.
Right, I understand that. I just, you know, when you lose one conference game in 2 years, I know it goes every year, but it's just funny that they gave him co-coach of it instead of just giving him the whole thing.
And congratulations to Cam Ward, who gets the sixth man of the year, who in conference really stepped up. And I got to give him a lot of credit because right around New Year's last year, I said Kurt Steidel needed to step up, and then he did. And then right around New Year's this year, Cam Ward needed to step up once conference play started. And he came out right away and was, you know, double figures and, you know, two of three games and then three of seven games or whatever, just gave them a punch off the bench, and he continued it through.
I was glad to see KJ Mora from UMBC win third team. It's the biggest pain in the butt at Patrick Gym this year. Little skinny guy's about 5'7", scored like 25 points, has that white headband that he always wears for all the games.
Yes.
You look at him and you go, what is that kid doing out on the floor?
He is so short.
He is. He went for about 25 in the game at Patrick.
By the way, who would be next if UVM, when they win? What's the next the matchup there? Not the 1-4 game? No, I mean, not the 2-3 game? No, that'd be the semifinals.
No, they would play the 4. If Albany wins their first game, they'd play Albany in the semifinals.
Oh, boy. That should be interesting, huh, Brady?
I mean, potentially it could be Albany and Hartford.
Yeah, although, I was just thinking about that.
Although you play the lowest remaining seed if you're the one. So
if there's some upset.
Oh, so if there's an upset.
If there's an upset, then you would play. They would play them. If everything goes chalk, then they would play Albany.
I got to believe they want another crack at Hartford, especially at home.
All right. Coming up next, for last story standing, I'm going to play Maury Povich. Who's your daddy? I'm going to tell you who's not your daddy. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Go. Time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, Last Story Standing. We all know Robert Kraft, owner of the Patriots, 76 years old.
What?
Because I know where this is going.
Well, his girlfriend...
On again, off again.
On again, off again. Yeah. Ricky Noel Lander. You might want to Google her. Ricky Noel Lander, L-A-N-D-E-R.
Okay. Is it Ricky like R-A-K-K-I?
R-I-C-K-I.
The Steely Dan song.
Extremely stunning. All right.
Okay.
Extremely good looking.
So Ricky. He's gotten over his wife's death, apparently.
Well, I'm not going to get into that, but extremely good looking. You didn't think he'd date a dog or anything like that. Well, she was
born in 1980.
Oh my gosh, look at her.
She's not even
she's not even half his age.
Yeah, she is. 70.
She's 38.
38.
She looks about 21.
Yeah, she looks a lot younger than that, though. I will say that.
Okay, so 76, 38. Let's do the math. That's exactly half.
Well,
good for him.
She was pregnant, and she had a baby. While she was pregnant, she got out of the public eye. People thought that she had broke up with Robert Kraft. I am here to tell you, Robert Kraft is not the father.
Says no.
Is not the father, Maury Povich. He is not the father. What do you think about that?
I'm singing Billie Jean in my head.
I don't even know how to answer that. I so do not care about Robert Kraft.
I was prepared to think that he was the father, so I'm like, wow, 74 years old, or 76 years old.
Well, then he'd just take over the Patriots later in
life. But that would not have been a record. Do you guys remember Ramji Raghav? Of course not. He happened to be an Indian former wrestler, born in India in 1916. Well, he claims to have had a child with his first wife, at the age of 94, and fathered a second child at the age of 96.
Go get him, Romdi.
He's a vegetarian who claims to engage in sex three times a day, and he was chosen for ambassador for PETA back in November of 2012. So there you go.
Is he still alive?
I do not know. Well,
he was born in 1916. Is he 101 right now?
He's got a strong heart.
He is still alive.
About 101 or 2?
Well, it says 101/102. It doesn't, because I don't think they're really sure.
Yeah. Think of all the exercise he gets. The guy is fit.
So his kid's, 5 and 7? Oh, come on,
honey,
now.
Could you change the diapers?
Oh, my goodness. How old is his wife? I'm sure she's half his age, right?
I'm sure she's not 97.
I got to assume that, man.
No,
you know,
no. Wow.
I'm telling you, that was my calling. Why I didn't get the fill in for Maury Povich, I have no idea.
I was going to say, I thought your calling was to father a child in 97.
No, no. It's when Maury Povich was out a couple of years back, they were looking for a fill in. And it was me and two other people that were going to fill in for a couple of weeks.
Can you imagine?
Oh, I was all geeked up about it. And the girl they picked was horrible at it. Absolutely horrible.
I could just picture you dodging the punches.
They interviewed like 30 people, and I got down to the final three. The final three. And I'm telling you, I'm like, oh, please pick me. Please pick me.
Well, at least you weren't a guest.
I was going to, you are not the father, sucker. No, he'd be happy about that. That was my call. All right, Brady, what do we got coming up? Where's your dad? I thought he was going to be here.
Kyle and Colchester.
Speaking of parents.
Get Ronji on the phone line as a guest.
Absolutely. That guy's a super athlete.
My dad will be here soon.
All right, what's coming up on Champlain Valley Game Night?
Well, we're going to do a little local sports talk. Damian DeJulian, hockey coach, St. Mike's. He's going to join us before their big playoff weekend. Then we're going to talk to Dave Bromirsky, who's on the staff at Southern Vermont College, about their NCAA tournament because he cut his teeth at Plattsburgh. We'll give you some more news on the Patriots with some tough choices and a little more light on why the Red Sox fired John Farrell.
You got the alphabet covered, that's for sure, with these last names. All right, for Brady and for Rich, I'm Arnie. Champlain Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.